Thanks. Well, I could say in honor of Duke Ellington, I'm going to improvise without notes, but that's okay. I know the melody. So I've written about cost-benefit analysis and the critiques of it, particularly focusing on the impossibility of monetizing benefits, that the benefits are so often priceless in whole or in part that the complete monetary calculation of costs and benefits is impossible due to the oddities of the schedule. That will be talked about more this afternoon. But I want to talk about the step that comes after that. When you make that argument, people always ask you, well, what's the alternative? What would you do instead? And aside from saying, well, we didn't exactly bankrupt ourselves in the 1970s protecting the environment, I think there's something to that answer, but people always want more of an answer than that. I think that there are two broad categories of alternatives depending on essentially in what way are the benefits that we're looking at priceless. There are two, at least two different meanings. One is where the benefits of regulation, of some kind of protection of health or the environment, is properly seen as an absolute standard. I think this can happen when there are issues of rights. The whole question of monetizing rights has never worked very well. It can also happen where the damages are essentially unbounded, as in the problem that I've been working on lately, climate change. The notion that one could monetize all the damages of climate change and thereby deduce the exactly correct amount of environmental protection has never really worked for anyone except a handful of economists who are professionally employed doing that. The question that comes up, if you believe that keeping emissions, keeping concentrations of CO2 below some level is absolutely required to protect, you know, the sustainability of future generations, what would it mean to conclude that a cost-benefit analysis showed that we couldn't afford to do that? Should we have one last party and pull the plug? I mean, that seems like the implication. If you take seriously a absolute standard, either as a matter of rights or as a matter of unbounded damages, and the unbounded damages from climate change could morph into the question of the rights of future generations. So these may in some sense be the same point. If you say that we are absolutely committed to not going above that, which could be expressed in economic terms by saying the marginal damage curve turns vertical at that point, the shadow price of exceeding that level becomes infinite, the cost-benefit analysis would then collapse into, would then become mathematically identical to a cost-effectiveness analysis of staying under that standard. What if we know from science what is the absolute level of CO2 in the atmosphere that we can't afford to exceed, if we know from some prior discourse of rights that we are not going to step over certain lines and certain kinds of damages, then the only economic question, and it's a subtle, interesting economic question, is what is the least cost strategy for staying under that limit? Cost-benefit analysis with infinite damages at some point becomes cost-effectiveness analysis. Those without graduate training in economics will find it much easier to know what you're talking about if you just call it cost-effectiveness analysis. So I think that the environmental intuition that damages become effectively infinite at some point, which is very clear in the way that the climate change discussion proceeds, and it's clear in some of the discourse of rights elsewhere. The other question, which I think is much closer to what Chris was talking about, when we don't have this sense of infinite damages, but where there is some large category of benefits which we cannot simply put a price tag on, and there I think some of what Chris was suggesting, that all of the information that goes into a cost-benefit analysis prior to the foolish monetization of the priceless benefits is very useful information. Describing costs, usually in dollars, describing benefits, usually in natural units, provides a very interesting basis for a discussion. If you say, as with the power plant cooling water issue, which is what originally led me to think about this, wouldn't it be smarter to say, here's what it's going to cost on your electric bill, and here's how many fish are going to be saved by it. It's a bit of calculation about what the electric bill effect is, a bit of a description of how many fish are. Do you want to buy the package? Do you want to save this many fish at this price on your electric bill, yes or no? That is a more coherent discussion which so many more people could participate in, as opposed to the process of cost-benefit analysis of the myriad species of fish, which reminds me of my biology professor in college, who said nobody who ever went into fish taxonomy ever came out again. I mean, that was more or less the feeling that one had in this, the attempt to do the cost-benefit analysis of many, many different fish with many different ecological roles. You could say, here, we're going to save a gazillion fish by raising your electric bill by the following amount. If people don't go for that, there's no hope for the fish. But so many more people could participate in that discussion. So I think that question of describing benefits in natural units, it's close to what some economists have referred to as stated preference valuation, although I think it's a broader concept. The valuation methods that have come out of economics are very focused on narrowing the scope of inquiry, and the purpose here is precisely to broaden it to capture the full range of benefits that are involved. So I think that's probably about the limit on time. Two different methods for two different situations, two different varieties of priceless benefits, one requiring cost effectiveness of staying under an absolute standard, the other requiring a holistic qualitative comparison of costs in money and benefits in natural units. Both of those, I think, lead to much more coherent decision-making procedures than trying to stick to cost-benefit analysis all the way.